It's the business.
The Hot Desk with Mary O'Neill on WLR.
Thanks to MK Brazel, Chartered Accountants and Tax Advisors.
Good evening. You're very welcome along to tonight's Hot Desk. Lots of things to talk about between now and 7 o'clock, including what's happening in Waterford for World Mental Health Month. Really important in the workplace. Monica Jackman, who is a career coach and counsellor, is holding some webinars. Also, we're going to talk mergers and acquisitions. Going to talk with an expert who'll let us know what you really need to decide if you're going to sell your company. All coming up. We're going to talk about the business of grocery retail now here on the Hot Desk, something I haven't touched on very often, to be perfectly honest, and obviously a huge sector in the country. BWG Foods has brands such as Spar, Eurospar, Mace, Londis and XL, and they're preparing for, I suppose, the future of grocery retail and retail with the Next Gen Entrepreneurs Programme. And someone who is partaking in that programme is Abbeyside-based Kelly Maroney, and she joins me now on the line. Kelly, how are you doing?
Hi, Mary. How are you? I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, thanks very much for joining me. Like I said, we'll get on to the BWG Next Gen Entrepreneurs Programme. We will talk about that shortly. But because I haven't spoken much about kind of the whole grocery retail space on the Hot Desk, I am looking forward to hearing some of that and bits about your own background. So tell me a bit about yourself.
So I started in retail just over 20 years ago. I began when I was 15 in Eurospar in Abbeyside in Dungarvan. I started as a deli assistant, just kind of closing up the deli at the weekends while I was still in school. I was lucky enough, because the store being so big, I got to have huge learnings in the deli, butchery, bakery, fruit and veg, all the fresh departments. I got eventually promoted to fresh food manager. Again, then I was very lucky that they gave me the opportunity about 7 years ago to do my retail management degree with the store, which has then led to me actually mentoring two participants in the store last year and this year on their journey to a retail apprenticeship. And then one has started their retail management degree as well. 3 years ago, I was then promoted to store manager. So I was able then to step out and learn more about the ambient and the management side of the business and what that takes. And then last month, I actually just recently started a new job with BWG as a retail tech advisor. So I suppose I do have a great passion for retail. It's probably one of the most exciting and diverse sectors within the economy at the minute. And every day is just a learning day. There's no 2 days are ever the same. Mm-hmm. And I've been very lucky. I've had an amazing opportunity to meet some great people, and I've made a lot of friends in the sector.
And it's such an essential sector, isn't it? I mean, you know, especially grocery retail, like no matter what kind of changes we see in society and, you know, I suppose the rise of digital technology, people have to go and buy food, don't they? And not just food,
yeah,
but household products and everything else as well. So it's something, I suppose, that's such an integral part of communities, really, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. And I've recently kind of learned on the Next Gen, especially, like, it's not just the small rural stores that play such a role in the community. Like, even the stores up in Dublin, like, Eurospar is kind of lucky enough that we kind of get to know our customers, and even the stores in the busy spots in O'Connell Street gets to know their people, gets to know the faces coming in, coming out every day. And then the rural stores are even a bigger part of the community. And to be fair, like, BWG does put a big push on celebrating community, and they want you to sponsor the local teams and be the integral part of your community.
In terms then of the changes you've seen, and I think you're well placed to talk about this because, like you said, you're 20 years in retail, and I'm right, I think, in saying most of those 20 years has been in kind of, I suppose, grocery retail as well. So what sort of changes have you seen over the years, even in shopping habits? Or are there interesting things you've noticed in terms of how people buy and shop, or what people are looking for maybe?
Yeah, I think there definitely has. I think the day of the big trolley shop is almost gone. I think a lot of people are focusing on kind of buying a little bit and often. They want to reduce wastage. They want to increase sustainability. I think you'll see a lot of people now are more focused on buying good value products and good healthy products. And we're definitely now more brand aware, and we're definitely more conscious of the food that we eat every day. And I think BWG has done a massive job in creating, and I know they did put a huge investment this year into rebranding their own brand products. And I think it's no longer seen as a cheaper option, that own brand products have almost become premium now. And we as consumers are looking for premium at a good price. And we've definitely become more price conscious. And I think BWG has definitely listened to the consumers in that. And we want our customers to be loyal. They've recently launched a Super Easy Rewards app this year. So that makes offers more available to consumers. And it also gives them a wider range of promotions that sometimes stores might not get to market all the promotions within the store. And the app then just creates so much more value to consumers. And I think that's so important now in the environment we are in.
Yeah, and I suppose it's how we shop as well. And you made an interesting point there, that people definitely care more about where their food came from. They're more likely to look for locally sourced products. I think definitely, you know, we're more health conscious maybe than we were 20 years ago. Not to totally generalise, but I'd say where you really might see that is at the deli counter, or, you know, what people are choosing for breakfast or what people are choosing as their snacks, that they might maybe be less inclined to go for foods that are, I suppose, quote unquote, bad for you, and more likely to look at healthier options, whether that's in deli or in other sections as well. But I'd say, having worked for decades in retail, you might really see that.
Yeah, I think one of the big initiatives, and I know BWG again do put an emphasis on it, is the farm to fork. And we want to know where our food came from. And we are definitely reading labels more. We want to know what's in our food. We want to know that it's sustainable for the environment as well. And I think it's great that consumers are now becoming more aware. And it's definitely a big change and shift in society. And then we just need to make sure that we are providing good quality foods at a good price to consumers. And I know a lot of stores are able to produce foods in store. And there's a massive range now, and a big push to continue that in BWG is to provide good value homemade in-store products to the consumers at a good price.
There's a lot of conversations, isn't there, in the news at the moment about the rise in the price of food. Food inflation is a huge topic, and people are saying, you know, something that might have been €5, you know, 10 years ago is €12 today, and it's bigger than inflation. Is that something, as someone who's I suppose, you know, in the retail space, is that something that you're conscious of, that people's shopping is becoming a lot more expensive?
Oh, 100%. And the price and the cost of inflation to the retailers has definitely gone up. The rising costs, energy costs are gone up again. That affects then, you know, transport, refrigeration. And then the consumers, unfortunately, then do see the effects of that. So that's why I think it's ever so important every day to make sure that every customer that you come into the stores gets the best value and gets the best service possible. And I think that we have done that quite well, in that we are providing a lot of promotions. We are providing good quality products to consumers. There's, like I said, there's a massive shift into rebranding and extending the own brand range to increase value to consumers. And then we just want to give the more personalized service and make our customers feel welcome, because the ones that come in the door, we want to keep them, and we want to get more in every day. And it's just a very tight environment at the minute, so every customer counts.
So I suppose, you know, I want to kind of talk to you about the challenges, and I suppose I've mentioned one challenge there, which is food inflation, and you know, trying to kind of make that balance between providing value for money but also absorbing your own costs. What are some of the other challenges in retail?
Theft is a huge one at the minute.
Right.
Shrinkage is quite large within stores, and unfortunately, that is a a massive challenge that every retailer would face. And then, like I say, speaking to a lot of guys from the next gen, you think that it is just only your store, but it's not. It's right across the country from the smaller stores, like I say, on O'Connell Street in the middle of Dublin, where you might expect it to, the little stores out in Donegal and Kerry, for example. So it definitely is a challenge that retailers face every day. And, you know, their costs that they must absorb them as well within the business. And unfortunately, then that just creates a smaller margin for retailers.
OK, tell me a bit about the next gen BWG program then.
So the next gen was created with the intention of trying to future proof the business, and it was an aim then just to get a group of entrepreneurs who are kind of on different stages of their journeys within the retail sector together. It was like a three-pronged approach that they wanted. We had an educational piece with DCU. We had a mentorship program, and then we had the networking side. So it all kicked off last year with a trip to Amsterdam, which was a fantastic opportunity to get to see how another country runs their retail sector. And we got to see the larger stores, the smaller stores, the more food focused stores. And then it was a great opportunity then to kind of get to start knowing each other and a bit more of a relaxed environment. So then we came back, then the educational piece kicked off in DCU. So we were up there a lot this year, where we had some amazing guest speakers and some really, really good lectures, and kind of focused a lot about leadership and mentorship and how the management side is changing within the business at the minute. And then the mentorship side was, again, it was fantastic. It was brilliant to get to speak to these guys who've been successful and who've had failures within the business, and how they've pushed on and how we can learn from that. And now we have these guys available to us to help us with questions and any problems that we're facing. And again, just to hear their stories was absolutely fantastic. And then the networking side was brilliant. It was great to have all the businesses from the estate, the Eurospar, Spar, Mace, Londis, guys from Excel, and how we were able to then connect the whole country together. Like, there was guys from Dublin and Kerry and Donegal, and as much as you feel like they're just problems that you face every day in your store, they're not. These guys were all facing the same problems and challenges. And just to have us all as a group together was amazing to learn and get advice from each other. And now we've kind of built this network that hopefully we're going to have for life to help and encourage each other along and be there for each other.
Brilliant stuff. We're almost out of time, Kelly. I suppose, you know, you're talking about the next gen program, and I suppose, you know, encouraging, I suppose, a whole generation of young people and new people to work in retail. What would you say to anybody who might be considering retail as a career?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's so fast paced. It's an amazing. It really is. There's no 2 days are the same, and you can learn and progress so much. Like, there is just so much in any store that you can learn if you're just willing to be passionate about it. And kind of once you love it, it's hard to get out of it.
I have to say, it's really lovely to hear someone talk about their job so passionately and who loves it so much, and, you know, just to be so insightful about it and so enthusiastic. It's really lovely. So thank you for taking my call, Kelly, who, of course, at this present moment is a technical advisor with BWG, a recent position, but with 20 years of a background in grocery retail and based in Dungarvan in Abbeyside. So thank you very much, Kelly, for talking to me this evening. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Mary. Appreciate the call.
The Hot Desk with Mary O'Neill, WLR's business programme.
Thanks to MK Brazel, Chartered Accountants and Tax Advisors.
We're now going to talk about mergers and acquisitions, kind of famously a very complicated process. Anybody who's been in a company that has gone through a merger or an acquisition will know that it can be very, very challenging, but also a really exciting and opportune time for business as well. Now, I'm delighted to be joined by an expert in this area, Ken McAndrew, who is founder and managing partner of Comigo Consulting. Ken, good evening. How are you?
I'm good, Mary. Good evening. Good to talk.
Yeah, you too. Ken, I suppose let's start at the basics. Tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Comigo Consulting. What's your own business background?
My own business background, I actually started life as an engineer. That's how I worked. That was the beginning of my career for a few years. And I moved into business advisory in about 2006 when I moved over to London and started working for one of the big four over there, Accenture. So I got good exposure over there working to large corporate clients, mainly across the UK, a few US clients. I moved back to Ireland then in 2011 and I joined a business called FTI Consulting. And in there is where I worked a lot with SMEs. And the guise in which I worked was on behalf of private equity clients. So, you know, private equity firms who would have bought an SME as one of their portfolio businesses, we'd be brought in then to help them improve the performance of that business. So that's where I kind of got my exposure, I guess, to owner managed businesses and working with SMEs and my love of working with SMEs. So so that's my background there. I think Comigo really was founded because, you know, when I was working with these SME owners, it was clear to me that, well, first of all, I enjoyed working with them because, you know, when you make a decision with an SME owner, decision gets implemented straight away and you can actually see the outcome of your advice, as well as kind of building a personal relationship with those individuals. Mm. But what I was seeing a lot of was, you know, guys, and obviously I'd been talking to them after they'd sold the business, but a lot of owners who'd left value on the table, essentially. You know, I'd go in and I'd look under the hood of the business and it was clear that if they'd done a couple of simple things before selling their business, they first of all would have got a probably more value from a transaction, but secondly they wouldn't have had to experience some of the pain that I was witnessing them experience in a post-transaction environment. So when I founded Comigo in 2022, it was really with that in mind. It was like helping SME owners in Ireland prepare their business correctly for a transaction so as they get the best value, but also so as they, you know, find the right buyer and make sure that the, you know, post-transaction life is as they would want it to be.
And we'll get into a little bit more about that and some pitfalls and some advice that you're going to give people now and give our listeners. But you've been on the go since, like you said, 2022, and you do have clients all over the country and beyond Ireland as well.
Yeah, I have a couple of UK-based clients, really across the country. I have some in Dublin. I've a couple in Waterford, actually, in your own region, mm. and a couple in Cork as well, and one in Donegal. So looking all across the country. And for me, it's really just kind of, you know, working with people who've spent a number of years building their business and really love their business, you know. And for me, like, the market for that in Ireland is broad, you know. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Are there many people doing what you do, you know, or is this quite a bespoke consultancy that you've set up?
Yeah, it's strange. It's funny. I actually started out doing more of the consulting to help businesses prepare for a transaction, and then as a consequence, I ended up doing the transactions with the business owners because you have that strong trusted relationship, and actually executing on a transaction and finding a buyer, while it can be quite complex, you know, it's a process that's quite similar for every business, that depending upon, irrespective of who you're selling to. So there's guys out there who do the M&A part, where if you want to sell, they'll go and they'll they'll bring your business to market, yeah, and try and find a buyer. But I don't think there's anyone who's actually doing the preparation piece, mm, like I do. So that's where I think we're different in the market. So it's really just kind of serving that business owner maybe 12 to 18 months out from doing a transaction to help them make sure their business is as attractive as possible when they're in the shop window, so as they get the best value for it and attract as many buyers as possible. But also so as they're kind of clear on who they want to sell to. Because what you see a lot of the time is, you know, business owners, you know, rushing into a transaction and probably undervaluing their business, which is a commercial loss, but then also just kind of being, you know, looking at a number and thinking that's great, and next thing they find themselves in a post-transaction environment where the person who's bought them isn't a strategic fit for what they wanted, and, you know, then things start getting, you know, tension starts to build and you have these kind of tricky earnouts and, you know, things don't go the way they should do. So it's trying to avoid that by working with the guys up front before the transaction starts.
So it's almost like a marriage as such, isn't it? But for businesses, like, there's a lot more to consider, especially if you're not going to walk away from the business after you've been acquired, I suppose, and you still have to work with people.
Exactly. Yeah. So like every business is different, right? So, depending upon the age of the owner, like they might want to stay around for longer or they might want to exit straight away. So understanding what you want post-transaction before you get into it is really important. And then also making sure you put the things in place so as, you know, you can allow for that. So if you take an extreme example of a business owner where there's a key man dependency or a key person dependency on them and they don't really have anyone direct reports and they're in their 60s, you know, selling a business like that, you might get it sold, but you can be sure you're going to be, you know, held to account for at least a 5-year period post transaction, which can get very, you know, strenuous.
Yeah.
So a way to maybe mitigate that is, you know, look at it 18 months out and say, okay, I want to exit here. So how do I put a team in place behind me so as when I do exit, you know, I'm able to sail off into the sunset, if that's what you want to do, right? Some 60-year-olds might want to hang around for another 10 years and keep driving us, you know.
Some 80-year-olds.
It's different for everyone.
Yeah. I suppose staff have to be considered as well, don't they, in any merger and acquisition activity, not only because it can often involve a lot of work depending on the role of the people in there, but there can be a lot of upset and worry when a business is being sold, and you do really have to consider the emotional impact of all of that, and that I suppose, like you said, that whoever acquires your business is going to care about your staff and care about the brand the way you did.
Yes, exactly. And that's, you know, unfortunately where things get forgotten as well, because, you know, what I've seen too often, unfortunately, is where, you know, people have sold the business because they've been offered a shiny number and they go after it, and then it's only afterwards that they realize that their staff, you know, are not happy or their legacy is being damaged, right? So actually, you know, thinking about that up front again before you go into a transaction, understanding how important are my people to me, how important is my legacy of my business to me, which in a lot of cases is really important, but no one's asking them those questions. Then that informs, I guess, first of all, how you know, communicate to the team about what you're doing, and sometimes you can't communicate that much pre-transaction, but also in terms of who you're actually finding as a buyer or investor. And you know, a lot of times I've worked with clients where we've walked away from the highest number because the buyer is actually the right cultural and strategic fit for the business, because it's about the people at the end of the day, especially in professional services where I do a lot of work. It's a very people heavy business, right? So you know, if you don't take care of your people and communicate before and in particular after the transaction process and integrate properly, you know, you risk losing those people, which is going to erode value in the business.
I suppose you need to consider as well the possibility of job losses. Like, I suppose, just say an example of where a smaller company might be bought by a big multinational, where roles can be streamlined or absorbed or, you know, outsourced or whatever happens in these situations. Like, that's something to consider as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really depends on the industry and, you know, the business that's selling and what's been sold. Obviously, I think in all, you know, all businesses, whether they've been sold or not these days, you know, AI is coming and things that are kind of high volume, low value can be automated quickly or outsourced to India, right? So that can happen in any business. In some of the larger businesses, you know, support functions like, say, for example, finance or you know, HR could be, if you had a firm buying up, say, 10 businesses, they might look to consolidate that. So it does happen sometimes, but, you know, not all the time, right? Because at the end of the day, when to people who are in the business, they know the people, in particular HR roles and finance roles, and they know where the kind of skeletons are as well. So it's actually pulling them out of the business can be disruptive and erode value in the business as well. So it's done on a case by case basis, but I wouldn't assume that just because your business is going through a transaction that there's going to be job losses. It's actually on the contrary. In some cases, it means there's going to be more hires because you're the person who's buying you is looking to grow the business, and you're actually taking investment to actually go on and serve more clients because you've got a bigger brand behind you or you've got more capability.
And I suppose often they have more money as well, which is why they're buying.
Exactly.
And then I suppose, you know, can you give some high profile examples then of successful mergers and acquisitions, whether that's ones you worked on or just kind of to give our listeners a good example of how it can work really well?
So I do a lot of work in professional services space. So Grant Thornton, US merged with Grant Thornton Ireland at the start of the year. So that was quite a landmark deal in Ireland in general. So I think it was 480 million was the value of that. And the purpose of that really was to kind of, you know, be able to provide cross-border services for between Ireland and the US. And it's essentially merging 12,000 staff over 50 offices between the two entities. So we're starting already to see kind of the synergies from that, in particular the revenue synergies. So going back to your piece around cost, you know, job losses, in this scenario, it was all about actually creating more work because you're able to create that flow between the States and Ireland, of which there's a lot these days, in particular post-Brexit.
Okay. So if you could give maybe people three quick pieces of advice if they're considering, selling on the company or some kind of M&A activity, what would those three pieces of advice be?
Yeah, the first piece really will be clear on why you want to sell a business or buy a business or merge with a business. That sounds simple, right? But it's actually like, why are you actually doing it? Is it because you want to make money now? Is it because, you know, you want to grow? Is it because you want to exit a business? There's lots of different reasons, and often that can be, you know, it when that's not clear, it can just lead to kind of complexities and you know, going down the wrong pathway. And that's particularly important in businesses where you have multiple shareholders, right? So, you know, if you have an older shareholder, for example, and a younger shareholder, they will have different views on what they want, right? So taking time to be clear on what you're trying to get out of it is super important. So that's what I'd say you should start with before you even think about putting yourself out in the market. The second piece then really is to be prepared for a transaction. So and that's kind of twofold. One is, you know, making sure that you're presenting your business in a way that's as valuable as possible, or as attractive as possible, so buyers will want to buy it. And there's a kind of a quantitative view of that, where you obviously want to be profitable and show strong revenue and recurring revenue where possible. But there's also a qualitative piece there around things like, do you have a strong leadership team? Do you have, you know, no concentration risk in your client base? So you don't want to have, for example, 50% of your revenue coming from one client. You know, you want to mitigate things like that. And is your operating model set for scale? So being prepared for that is really important. And then also being prepared for a transaction in general, because there's lots of stuff you have to do in terms of due diligence that you just need to prepare for. So all your data from a financial perspective and your legals and your HR documentation and your legal documentation needs to be tidied up. So preparing in advance is key. So that's point number two. And then the third point really is, it's select the advisors who are the right advisors for you. And I know I'm obviously saying that because I am an advisor, it's a really emotional journey selling your business, especially if it's your own business that you built up, and it can be quite, you know, there's lots of ups and downs, and it can be quite overwhelming. So when you're trying to do that on your own, it can cause a lot of the time it can lead to deal failure or deals falling out of bed or being a lot more strenuous than they need to be. So having someone who can kind of sit in the passenger seat beside you, kind of keep you calm and kind of, you know, hold your hand through the process in a way that's kind of, you know, that's sustainable is really important. So and it's often forgotten about, and you hear the horror stories when it's not done properly.
Okie doke. Brilliant advice there, and a really in-depth piece there. Thanks very much for talking to me. Ken McAndrew, founder and managing director of Camigo Consulting. I appreciate the call.
The Hot Desk with Mary O'Neill on WLR.
Thanks to MK Brazel, chartered accountants and tax advisors.
Well, October is Mental Health Month. World Mental Health Day was on the 10th of October, but I suppose the whole month is a time to reflect on the importance of mental health. And mental health is really, really important in the workplace for so many reasons that have been well documented. And, you know, it ties in with your own sense of self, your own self-confidence, whether you have your own business, you're an employer or an employee. Monica Jackman runs her own coaching and counselling service in Waterford City, and she is running two webinars on the 28th of October, which is a Tuesday, the last Tuesday of the month, in association with Healthy Ireland, and it's all part of Mental Health Month. Monica is in studio with me now. Monica, good evening. How are you?
Good evening, Mary. I'm good. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
No bother at all. You're very welcome back to the programme. Monica, can you just talk to me a little bit about your own business and what you do for our listeners who aren't aware or might have missed the last interview you did with me?
Right. Well, my business is Monica Jackman Counselling and Coaching and Life Coaching. and leadership coaching, and I work in private practice, and I also work with employee assistance programs. So they provide counselling for their employees. Some of the larger companies in Waterford would provide employee assistance program. So I work in private practice. I've been working for many, many years, I suppose probably over 30 years, hate to say it, but anyway, it's the truth. And well, I should be proud of that. That's okay. And about 20 years working with the employee assistance programmes. And about 6 years ago, I trained in life coaching and leadership coaching with neuroscience. Mm. So I've been working in that area then ever since.
Okay. And what exactly is life coaching with neuroscience? Mm.
So it really looks at the whole person. It looks at the mind-body-brain connection. Mm. So it's really kind of considering when somebody does something that they might not have done before, or something they want to do they hadn't done before, the body will produce some dopamine and some serotonin. And if somebody is in a group and they're having a very good kind of feeling, networking with the group or meeting somebody, there's oxytocin. So in life coaching, leadership coaching, with neuroscience, we really help people to understand how they can affect their own body and their own brain and have these chemicals working for them, because they're working all of the time. There's neurotransmitters, millions of them working in the body all of the time, and we can affect how they work with us, you know, by doing deep breathing, exercise, different things that build up our confidence and our well-being. So it really is important to be kind of conscious of the neuroscience and the neurochemicals, that if we do something good for ourselves, if we get a promotion or we do something good in work, that it's okay to kind of feel that little rush of dopamine and saying, you know, actually, I did that. I can use that for the next thing that I want to do. Mm-hmm. So it's being conscious of it. It's having that high awareness about it.
Okay.
Learning about it.
Okay. I mentioned at the beginning that, you know, this is Mental Health Month, and I kind of alluded to it, but I think you can explain it better yourself, Monica, why I suppose there needs to be such a focus on mental health in work. And I mean, it's kind of, in a way, it's a bit of a no-brainer because of all the stresses that come with work, but it is something that we need to be kind of constantly conscious of, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Because there's so many challenges, as you say, in the workplace, deadlines, relationships, you know, conflicts and expectations and different, I suppose, again, from the neuroscience point of view, people are coming from different values. They have different ways of working, different ways of doing things. So you might have somebody very, you know, head based, that they're very, they plan a lot and they're very technical in how they schedule their day and their quarter and all of this, and you might have somebody else that would be more, you know, heart based or gut based. Mm-hmm. And you're working together in system with all of these different types of people that maybe have different ways of approaching things, and then trying to find a way for them to compromise and come together and work. So that can be stressful in itself then, if you're meeting with somebody that works in a different way than you, and still, you know, the company has still got its goals and its deadlines and all of that to meet. So I suppose it is really important to have a place to deal with that, to go outside maybe of the workplace, whether it be EAP coaching, counselling or coaching, to go and kind of have a space to think about that, to kind of see how you're operating yourself within that.
So you've teamed up with Healthy Ireland. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, Healthy Ireland and Healthy Waterford specifically then is coordinated by Owen Morrissey in Waterford, and they are bringing opportunities for health, I suppose, into workplaces, into the communities. They're travelling around the city and county, bringing opportunities for play and for children, for different kind of skills. They're bringing them to all around the place, I suppose, to kind of provide equal opportunities. And I suppose what they have done in the last year, they have set up a networking group for health professionals.
Yeah.
And I'm part of that group. I'm one of that group. So it's people working within agencies, people working in the community, self-employed people. And he's brought all of these people together, and Healthy Waterford and that team and the companies that support him, and to encourage networking, to encourage outreach into the community. Because we know that if people exercise and eat well and talk about their problems, their mental health is going to be better, their health in general, and then their confidence, their well-being in the workplace is going to be better. It's going to be better within families. So it has a knock-on effect throughout the community, into the workplace. really, I suppose, people being more conscious of this, and I suppose Healthy Waterford are providing the opportunities for people to do that. And I suppose as part of Mental Health Month, then I'm running these two webinars then in conjunction with Healthy Waterford.
So the two webinars are happening on the 28th of October. So can you give me a few more details then about what they entail and what people can expect if they sign up to them?
Yeah, I suppose it's unlocking confidence, and it is empowering yourself and inspiring other people. And I'm running the same webinar two times on the one day. So just sign up for the one unless you want to go to the two of them. And it's just to give people an opportunity to go at lunchtime at 1 o'clock and at 7 o'clock in the evening for people who can't go at lunch. And it's about confidence. It's about understanding what confidence is, understanding the difference between confidence and self-esteem. Self-esteem is a kind of a deep inner belief that you're a person is a good person. But it doesn't mean that naturally that confidence flows from that, that they're able to go out into the world and do the things that they want to do. So it's really about, I suppose, helping people to understand how they can feel more confident. And it may be true, you know, exercise and communicating with people and having good networks and being around people who support you. Mm-hmm. And I suppose there are people that kind of can get in our way and maybe aren't as encouraging. So it's about kind of seeing who are the encouraging people in your life and surrounding yourself with those people, and also listening to the inner critic. And kind of if you're saying, oh, I can't go for that promotion, I can't go for that job, the imposter syndrome is you know, on high alert, saying I'm not as good as the next person. It's to kind of be aware of that inner critic and say, actually, I'm just as good as anybody else. And why shouldn't I go for that promotion? Okay. Or why shouldn't I do that thing that I want to do? So that's what I'll be focusing on in the webinar.
Okay, so it sounds like it's aimed at a broad range of people, really. And how long is each webinar?
It's 1 hour, so people can pop out for the 1 hour at their lunch hour.
Great.
And it definitely is for a wide range of people. It's for anybody who wants to fulfil a dream or do something that they haven't done before because they kind of have thought, I can't do that, I'm not good enough. So it's for anybody really who wants to step outside of the comfort zone and do something different.
How can people join the webinar then?
Yeah, so they can join on my website, monicajackman.ie, or they can join on my social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and they can also join on the Healthy Waterford social media.
And do people need to register in advance?
They do, just to book the space. Mm-hmm. And it's free. It's completely free of charge. And they do need to book the space. And if they can't attend, if they can cancel it, because there's a limited number of spaces, so that everybody that wants to get on gets a chance to get on.
Okay, Monica, before I let you go then, can you give out the details again, the name of the webinar, when it's happening and how people can find it online?
Yeah, so it's Unlocking Confidence. It's Empower Yourself and Inspire Others. And it is Tuesday, the 28th of October at 1 o'clock and 7 o'clock. And they can go on to monicajackman.ie or onto social media and they'll find it there.
Great, Monica. Perfect. You've outlined it all for us there. Yeah. Thank you very much for talking to me this evening and for coming to studio, and enjoy the webinar yourself.
Thank you, Mary. Thanks very much.
Thanks again to Monica, to Ken and to Kelly, my guests on tonight's Hot Desk. John O'Shea is on his way with The Late Show. Have a lovely evening.